The following is a class given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami on November 22, 1996 at New Talavan Farm in Carriera, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 13, Verse 18.
Vidurastada vipretya Dvita rastram abhasata Rajan nirgamyatam sigram Asyedham bhayamagatam. Translation by His Divine Grace of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Mahatma Vidura knew all this, and therefore he addressed Dhritarashtra, saying, "My dear king, please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you." Report by Srila Prabhupada, read by His Grace, Ganagamya Das.
Cruel death cares for no one, be he Dhritarashtra or even Maharaj Yudhishthira. Therefore, spiritual instruction as given to old Dhritarashtra was equally applicable to young Maharaj Yudhisthira. As a matter of fact, everyone in the royal palace, including the king and his brother and his mother, was rapidly attending the lectures. But it was known to Vidura that his instructions were especially meant for Dhritarashtra, who was too materialistic. The word Rajan is especially addressed to Dhritarashtra significantly. Dhritarashtra was the eldest son of his father. Therefore, according to law, he was to be installed on the throne of Hastinapur. But because he was blind from birth, he was disqualified from his rightful claim. And he could not forget the bereavement, and his disappointment was somewhat compensated after the death of Pandu, his younger brother. His younger brother left behind him some minor children, and Dhritarashtra became the natural guardian. But at heart he wanted to become the factual king and hand the kingdom over to his own sons, headed for Duryodhana. With all these imperial ambitions, Dhritarashtra wanted to become a king, and he contrived all sorts of intrigues and consultation with his brother-in-law, Kuni. But everything failed by the will of the Lord. And at the last stage, even after losing everything, men and money, he wanted to remain as king, being the eldest uncle of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira, as a matter of duty, maintained Dhritarashtra in royal honor, and Dhritarashtra was happily passing away his number of days in the illusion of being a king or the royal uncle of King Yudhisthira. Vidura, as a saint, and as the duty-bound, affectionate youngest brother of Dhritarashtra, wanted to awaken Dhritarashtra from his slumber of disease and old age. Vidura therefore sarcastically addressed Dhritarashtra as the king, which he actually was not. Everyone is a servant of eternal time, and therefore no one can be king in this material world. King means the person who can order. The celebrated English king wanted to order time and tide, but the time and tide refused to obey his order. Therefore, one is a false king in the material world. And Dhritarashtra was particularly reminded of this false position and of the factual fearful happenings which had already approached him at that time. Vidura asked him to get out immediately. If he wanted to be saved from the fearful situation which was approaching, in fact, he did not ask Maharaj Yudhisthira in that way because he knew that a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira is aware of all the fearful situations of this worldly world, and would take care of himself in due course, even though Vidura might not be present at that time.
Harihi Om Tat Sat. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport of text 18, chapter 13, canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So now Vidura is beginning his heavy preaching, Blitzkrieg, to his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, because Dhritarashtra is going to hang on as long as he can to his position in his family life, and is completely impervious to the quick approaching death. Not aware of it at all, not thinking about it. Even though he's getting old, his teeth are falling out, his eyesight is already gone from birth, so that's not a question, but his hearing is getting poor. In the old age, all the senses start to diminish in their shakti. So he's going through all these phases, but he's still hanging on to be comfortable in his situation. I remember Srila Prabhupada was preaching to one householder, devotee, Bengali in the congregation in India, who was already like above 60, 65, and he was telling Prabhupada, I wanted to fully dedicate it to spiritual life and everything. And Prabhupada said, why don't you come and move into the temple? Why don't you take vanaprastha? He said, no, I can't live without my wife. She's been serving me. And so, no, but you can come and, his little house. He was a poor man. He had a little, like a tin roof house, and he was not really well off, but he was really attached. He couldn't live even more than 3 days without staying with his family. It was, although he was, nice, a very nice person, but, he was getting old, and it was like obvious that he wasn't going to live so long, but he was not able to detach himself at all. So this is a normal situation. Prabhupada brought out even these politicians, especially in India and Asia, you see that politicians stay till their fag end of life, still hanging on to whatever position they have, rather than dedicate their last period of life for the spiritual emancipation. In Vedic culture, the end of life is supposed to be to prepare ourselves for the next life. At least at the end of life. The whole life is a preparation, but the last laps of the race, you have to put out your best effort, if at all you want to finish the race with any kind of good result. But Dhritarashtra, he's not even thinking about that. It's like, everybody thinks that's not going to happen to me. That was also commented on by Parikshit Maharaj, that the most wonderful thing was that everybody thinks he's not going to die. Even though they see their grandfathers died, fathers died, still, they think, it doesn't come in their mind that I'm going to also die. Somehow it's something we just put off. So sometimes a loved one who has transcendental knowledge needs to preach the truth heavily to waken up their relative from their illusion and get them to focus on the spiritual life. This is essential for many people. But usually what happens, you don't have a relative who is so merciful and so conscious. Some devotee also told me how he had went to see his father, and his father was on a deathbed, and all the relatives were there, and the father, the doctor said that he's not going to live. One day, a few hours, he's on the way out. Fading fast. And he's all worried, what's going to happen? You see that the dog is taken care of, and see that the little, the grandson, and this and that. And, but people, don't worry, everything will be all right, you're going to get all right, and people cry, just like the whole scene, And then the devotee comes in there and sees that, these people are, you know, not helping my father at all. He's about to die. He said, look at, give me 5 minutes with my father, 5 minutes alone. The son, this may be the last period I have to talk to him. I just want to talk 5 minutes. Takes everybody out, closes the door, and tells them like it is, look at dad, you're about to die. And I want to tell you something, but actually you're the spirit soul, living force in the body. You're eternal, you're never going to die. But you have to leave the body, but you have to prepare yourself just for this moment. Please repeat after me this meditation on God. And I get up, got him to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And immediately, you know, it's like, he felt peace together. I used to see, like, for a moment, you know, I was like, he was peaceful, and even if I leave the body, I'm not going to die, and he just chanted. But his 5 minutes were up with his father, and he opened the door, and they all came, crying, you know, everything's going to be all right, and everything's not going to be all right, you know, and then the whole emotional impact again, then, you know, you get bewildered, right? So, anyway, at least, it's very hard for people to focus their mind on Krishna at the end of life. Certainly, it's very difficult in that situation with all the emotional relationships with everyone. So, that's why it's recommended to go to a holy place at the end of life or to somehow or another focus on Krishna, get away from a lot of the entanglements, and thus be able to fix your mind on Krishna at the end of life. But Vidura could see that there's no way the Dhritarashtra is going to be focused in that situation. He's completely unfocused right from, you know, his birth. And certainly nothing's going to change where he is. So he's making one last stab at it to preach to Dhritarashtra and get him out of the illusion. Now preaching in Krishna consciousness is not some kind of impersonal prototype, whatever, like a stereotype kind of a thing. Prabhupada mentions that preaching can never be a stereotype. Preaching has to be according to the time, place, and circumstance. And a person has to have the intelligence how to reach the particular audience. So in this case, Vidura, knowing very well his brother, he knew where he was at. So therefore, he specifically chose his words. And in the following verses, we'll see how he preached to him in a unique way. Preached to him, blasting him. You're just like, you know, an old dog sitting here eating up the scraps from the very people who have killed all your sons. And he just preached to him. He just like gave it to him because you know that this person, more than any transcendental motivation, he's motivated by his false ego. And if I just insult him in a loving way, I'm going to get more mileage out of it than any kind of philosophical presentation. Which is, I mean, that's quite a unique, you know, preaching. You have to be somewhat of a psychologist to preach. You have to know your audience. That's why sometimes when you're preaching to people you don't know, you want to hear what they say. For me, the toughest thing is to preach to a Sunday feast crowd everywhere. I see the spectrum of everybody, and where do you aim? Who do you preach to? So, Dhritarashtra was getting the mercy, but sometimes the mercy like that is hard to swallow. Now, Prabhupada, he also said that I being an older Indian, you know, an old Indian body, I can say things you can't say. Like Prabhupada, he could sometimes even critically address his fellow younger Indians and get away with it. But if a foreigner does it, then they get all, you know, who are they? They're just, you know, upstarts, kind of just came in. Who are they to tell us our own religion? And they may get very upset. They're not ready to take, you know, that we talk down to them. You have to kind of talk different way. Maybe when we're old with white hair and everything, then it's different. Or if they're your disciples, maybe they'll accept it. But just if you preach to normal Hindus, you find that sometimes they don't take it. If you preach to them too heavy, too direct, because they say, well, who is he to talk to me like this? So Prabhupada mentioned that. It's not that everybody can preach to everyone in the same way. And he could preach ways that we can't. We couldn't, you know, maybe in some circumstances somebody can. And so therefore preaching is target-oriented. Preaching is like a doctor taking care of his patient. So you have to see what is the medicine I can give which is going to deliver my patient. If you preach really right on, heavy, to everybody the same, but then nobody accepts it, then what's the use? You're not saved anybody. Dhritarashtra was getting heavy preaching by Vidura, but he knew this was the time, and this was the only hope, and so it was like all or nothing. So he gave it his best shot. He gave it his best attempt. And he was successful. He knew that he can't even preach to Dhritarashtra about being a devotee because he was envious his whole life against the Pandavas and Krishna. So to preach to him about bhakti yoga was not going to be very effective. So instead he just preached to him on a level just to get him to give up the material attachments and go into the forest and do mystic yoga. So that's another thing. That in this case, because Dhritarashtra was not able to accept bhakti yoga, still Vidura wanted to give him the best thing that he could take. Now that's another example how a preacher considers what is the level that I can elevate this person to under his or her situation. How can I elevate this person to what is the next best stage that they could reach to? There's no use of preaching to someone who's just in the beginning stages to do things which they could not even conceive of doing. It's almost like doing a violence on them. Just like if a doctor was prescribing open heart surgery when a person is in a very weak situation, they'll dry right on the operating table. So this is what happens sometimes because of stereotype preaching. We may try to present Krishna consciousness to someone who's very much in material consciousness but in a very elevated or forceful manner. And as a result, they kind of die on the operating table and then we never see them again. So preaching needs to be patient-oriented. Who is the person that we're preaching to? How to actually help them? What is the best situation they could achieve at the present stage they're at? And devotional service is a gradual process, so you take them step by step. What's the next step they could get up to? When they get them firmly established on that step, then you can take them up to the next step. And some people can go faster than others. Some people may have been devotees in their previous life, and for them they can go very quickly. Someone might be coming in contact with us very recently. Recently meaning maybe they've only had a few births of spiritual activity and not much of devotion. Or maybe this is their first birth. So in this way, it's difficult to tell how many births someone's been serving, but some of the symptoms are, is people who are really spontaneously attracted to Krishna when they come, they really have a spontaneous taste for serving, enthusiasm, something a little bit extraordinary. It's usually a symptom that they were devotees in the previous life and they've taken up now where they left off. Prabhupada said to many devotees, at one point he was commenting that certain of his disciples were devotees in the previous life and that's why they could take it up so quickly. Even we tried to protest and then Prabhupada got angry, don't doubt the words of the spiritual master. So, everybody is not in the same situation. When we preach in a general way, we have to preach generally. When we go into specific preaching, we have to consider how we can help this person, what is the best scenario they could conceivably achieve and help them to get there. And then, of course, the Dhritarashtra, he's just at the fag end of his life. There's not much hope for him to survive much longer. So Vidura is just trying to get him into some kind of meditation, and that will be better than nothing. And there won't be much time for him to do more than that, because he's really old. Very, very old. So we can see here how Vidura used sarcasm. He called him Raja when he wasn't a king. King Yudhisthira. King Dhritarashtra. The king was Yudhisthira, but King Dhritarashtra. You think you're the king. You're just hanging on to this royal prestige. You're not the king. So give up all these attachments and actually ready yourself to go back to Godhead. That's noble. This is what Prabhupada really appreciated, that any attempt to be God-conscious, any attempt to achieve self-realization is actually great. It's noble in this world. It's something really wonderful. Most people don't even try. They don't try for their spiritual advancement. They don't try to let the living force take control of the intelligence and the mind and the senses. They don't try to spiritually understand who they are. They just go with the flow. Like lemmings running into the ocean, they just go where everybody's going. They say that most people are just blind and they just follow what everybody else does. But the actual intelligent person tries to understand, what is the purpose of life? Why am I here? What will happen to me after I die? What is the whole purpose of life? How can I live in such a way that I'll be able to achieve a self-realization in this lifetime? So, sometimes unusual things wake us up. For instance, in the Padma Purana, there's a history about two people born in a family of devotees. Both they become husband and wife. But they were very negligent on their spiritual life. They just didn't pay attention to their Krishna consciousness, or even though they had the advantage of being born in from parents who were devotees and brahmanas. So then they were wandering around, kind of going around, traveling around, checking different things out around the world, trying to experience life. So one day they were just like in their journey. It was hot, and they sat under a big tree where it was. Nice shade was there. And so they're cooling down a bit. But they didn't know that this tree was previously used by some king to hang criminals. It was the hangman's tree, and it was filled with subtle entities. So she was feeling kind of an eerie mood there in that tree, you know, like, I feel something, you know. But that kind of stimulated her, and she asked her husband, husband or boyfriend or whatever. What is the purpose of life? And what are we doing here? We're wandering around everywhere, you know, I don't feel satisfied. What is the whole purpose of life? What are we meant to do? What is life? Who are we? What is this? Why are we forced to suffer in this material world? What happens after we die? Just like Sarah just threw out the question. The husband wanted to kind of show off that he was, in tune spiritually, because he had remembered a half a verse in the Bhagavad Gita when he was, in the Gurukul. He could remember a half a verse, and so that kind of summed up this question, this point. So then he declared the first part of the first verse of the eighth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. King Tat Brahma, King Adhyatma, King Tat Purushottama. King Tat Brahma means, what is the absolute truth? Or the self? What is absolute truth? King Tat Brahma, King Adhyatma, what is the self? King tat karma. What is the laws of karma? Purushottama. Oh, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Arjuna was asking Krishna. When he shouted this out, you know, he yelled and he just spoke it very loud to his wife, very forcefully. King tat brahma, king adhyatma, king tat karma, purushottama. Pow! It was a huge like, explosion and the tree kind of fell over. They, you know, they said they're in the hot sun and the tree luckily didn't fall on them. And they see all this subtle entities coming out of the tree and they're all achieving spiritual bodies. Because under that tree here, you just chanted half a verse of the Bhagavad Gita by hearing that sacred word, the vibration that Krishna himself had spoken. All the ghosts were liberated from their material bondage. That man, he was like completely amazed. He said, "What? What did I do? You know, wow! This verse has got a lot of shakti, a lot of potency. Just by chanting it, look at all these ghosts all got liberated." So he became very faithful. Just like all of a sudden, he went from kind of really lazy in his spiritual life, a little puffed up and lazy, to really focused. The Bhagavad Gita has this potency. So he'd be chanting after every day in the morning. He would chant for hours and hours. King tat brahma, king adhyatma, king tat karma, purushottamaha. King tat brahma, king adhyatma, king tat karma, purushottamaha. It's like a mantra. He was kept chanting it day after day. His whole life he said, waiting, you know, when is it going to happen for me? All the others got living. But Krishna kept him on the line for a while. One day in the spiritual world, the goddess of fortune looked at the Supreme Personality of Godhead and saw he's smiling and said, what are you smiling about here? What are you laughing about? He said, well, there's this Brahmana in the planet Earth and he's chanting half a verse of the Bhagavad Gita every day and I'm just thinking, what is it I can give him? What benediction can I give him in return for what he's doing? And in the end, he called for him and took him back. So even a little bit of spiritual life and devotional service, of contact with Krishna, can easily deliver someone. But we don't even do the little bit. Lord Chaitanya came in the world to give everyone a chance. Just if everybody tried to chant every day, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Took some Krishna prasadam and tried to help other people to be free from their misery and their suffering due to illusion. You can easily, everyone can easily get back to Krishna. Easily be very happy in this life, free from the contaminations and be eligible to go back to Godhead in the next life. So, where are we now? Let's see. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He advised us, Bolo Krishna, Bhojo Krishna, Koro Krishna, Shikha. Chant Hare Krishna. Worship Krishna and study the teachings of Krishna. What are the teachings of Krishna? Who can say? Any other teachings of Krishna? Which books are considered teachings of Krishna? Srimad Bhagavatam, yes. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Krishna. So both are considered teachings of Krishna or Krishna Katha. So by reading every day Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, this has a tremendous effect to purify us from the illusory energy. Focus on what the actual truth is. So sometimes we hesitate to get involved in spiritual life and we kind of just stay on the surface and we miss what is the real point. There's an example how there was a honeybee looking at a glass bottle of honey and he wanted to get to the honey. So he kept going backwards and he couldn't see the glass, he could just see like the honey standing there. The as for in his vision, the glass was like invisible. So he came back and was buzzing. He flew right in to dive into the honey and pow! He hit his head on the glass bottle, you know, and was knocked down. That's the hardest honey I've ever found. Usually honey is very soft and sticky. Then again, after, so let me try one more time. Again, it smashed himself. So she went back for the third time and again tried, but again, the honeybee, she was smashed up. So finally, being completely punch drunk and dazed from all the collisions with the glass bottle, somehow, when she's flying around the glass bottle, she landed on the top of the glass bottle. And there the aroma, the scent of the honey was very strong. And then, in her dazed state, she thought, I reached the honey. I have achieved honey. Honey state. But actually, she hadn't achieved the honey. She was just on the lid. Honey was still inside. Sometimes we try and try to get spiritual life, but we don't actually have a bona fide spiritual master. We don't follow the process. Someone has to open up the jar of honey and then we can get inside. We might get very close, we may see it. We try different ways and finally we get close and we think, now I've achieved it. Because we can smell it. We're not actually achieved God consciousness. When we actually achieve God consciousness, it's something very sublime. That time, the nature of the soul, which is always happy, manifests, and we become very relieved from material sufferings, and we become spiritually, naturally happy, blissful in the heart. Then all kinds of good qualities of Krishna, like compassion for others and many good qualities start to manifest. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to criticize the Brahmanas, how they, even the Brahmana devotees would just follow what everybody else did without really knowing. In many cases, people don't take the time to know and understand what is the philosophy. Sometime a Brahmana would come down with his plate to do worship of the Ganges, and every Brahmana came there with a plate, with the arti tray, with the lamb to offer, a flower, incense. So how to recognize which was his plate? He was thinking, you know, I'll come out, I might pick somebody else's by mistake. So he picked up a little piece of the Ganges mud, rolled it into a ball, and put it on his plate. Then he went and took his bath. After bathing, came out to get. He found every plate had a little ball of Ganges mud. It was, oh, he put a ball of. Maybe that's a rule. You have to put a ball of Ganges mud. Without thinking, they all picked up Ganges mud and put a ball on their plate because one person did it. They didn't know why he was doing it. But the reason he was doing it is that his plate was different than everybody else. If they knew the principle, why he put the ball. Somebody would put a twig, and someone else put a pebble, and someone put some. Everyone put something different. So that's why this is Krishna consciousness is known as Buddhi Yoga, the yoga of intelligence. That is recommended. We try to understand the principles behind why we do the things we do, so that way we can apply it in different circumstances. So this verse today, where Vidura is preaching, you see, someone blindly thinks that, okay, Vidura chastised his brother and heavied him out, and therefore he gave up everything, and therefore this is what I should do. Everybody I meet, I should chastise them and heavy them out, and everyone will surrender. Right? That would be a stereotype imitation. You burn everybody out, nobody would surrender, and they say, this person is a horrible person, and so on. So you have to understand the principle, what is Vidura doing? That actually he's preaching to this person in the way that would only, the way that will reach the person. Now, if we understand the principle, then we would apply it differently to different people depending on how, what will touch their heart, what will awaken them. We actually want to administer a medicine which will awaken people and free them from whatever their illusion. whatever their conditioning might be, or whatever way we can help them in their spiritual life. So the principle needs to be understood. When you apply the principle, you can apply it to so many circumstances. But if you don't know the principle, you just follow the superficial example of what has been done here, then you can create a lot of havoc. So I'll give some time here for questions and answers. Hare Krishna. Yes?
In my line of work, sometimes I get incredible people come to see me and I don't understand why Krishna is distant to me. But the other day I had four Freudian psychiatrists come see me. And they were all atheists. And one of them was getting ready to die. I wasn't going to say anything. Will you tell me when I'm going to die? I said, no. So that's not my job. And I couldn't get to any of them to even believe in God, except one man. He had a little tiny spark that maybe possibly he could exist. How do you work with people like that? I did tell her a couple of my experiences, and maybe she felt it, but it's very difficult.
Well, I don't know why if someone's about to die, there's ways you could dovetail that in terms of preaching. You could use it as a, well, you know, astrology is a science saying what are the influences on you from your karma since birth. And normally in the material circumstances, people cannot change their karma. They tend to go in a particular direction and just stick in that direction. According to my reading, you may not have a very long period to survive the way you're going. However, there's a supreme power that's above all of us that can change karma. And I don't know if you're interested, but if you chant mantra, you may be able to change the karma, because mantras can change one's karma, where all I can do is read what the karma, what you have, what your present influences are. And what they are now is, doesn't indicate a very long life at this point. But if you try mantra therapy, then you may be able to change your karma. And maybe they go for it, I don't know, something like that. I have some doctors that give free medical treatment, and then they find a lot of the people are, the main problem is almost psychological, and they get them also to chant Hare Krishna in South America, plus they give them some medicine. Any other question? Do you have any question? Another question? That was the what?
The most unique encounter I've ever spent in my life. It was quite a momentous experience seeing all that material energy that was being used in the name of commercialism and sense gratification. There's just a lot of energy there, a lot of technology. It could show up something wrong. And a lot of intelligence, very, very up to date.
Well, that's why when we go around and because we're trying to use it for our more progressive spiritual purpose, some people just talk with us in a very commercial sense and they just do business. But some people actually express that you're really, this is the kind of thing we're always hoping to do. To actually to do something which would use this technology to help people become more aware of who they are, make a really better world. Many people, because you were kind of off, you didn't hear what they said, but some people say that we prefer not to have vacua exhibits. And what you, we prefer to have something with more substance. Of course, what they usually consider substance is what they call edutainment. Educational entertainment. Edutainment. But still it's not spiritual. But this is like probably one of the few, maybe the only, one of the very rare people that are trying to use these things for Krishna consciousness. For spiritual upliftment of people. Actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he did the first theistic exhibit in Calcutta at that time, and he had a whole display of dioramas, which were, and some of them were moving. So he was like the forerunner of animatronic and using figures for presenting the pastimes of Krishna and philosophical presentation. So Prabhupada, he also wanted to use these figures, and sometimes he said even something just apart from showing Krishna's pastimes, he said some of them could be even satirical. You could show some mad scientist doctor with a dead patient on the bed, like lifting off the patient is dead and he's got an oversized syringe. And he's trying to inject some chemical in him to bring him back to life. So like that there's no cure for death at the present time, but they're like cheating people by telling that don't worry, in the future everything will be alright. We're gonna figure it out. Nobody's gonna die. And it's just it's just another form of cheating in the name of science. So Prabhupada wanted to use different kinds of even satirical presentation to make people look at things from a different perspective. So one of the people we talked to yesterday said, we like to think of an exhibition as a kind of a, like you say, it's a black box where you enter in one side with one set of principles and set of values. When you come out, you change. You're taking something with you, which has added something to your value of life, to your values in life, so on. So everybody wants to do that, but in reality, if you don't have something spiritual to offer people, the most you can do is maybe touch their moral sense or a sense of appreciation of finer things in life, maybe beauty. Probably what they do is bring them up a little bit to the more refined levels of Rajagun or maybe the Satyagun. But we're coming and we're having Vasudeva platform, which is the transcendental platform, pure goodness. And we're very hopeful that we're very confident actually that by presenting Krishna consciousness in this way, we'll be able to change the consciousness of many people. This will be very pleasing to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. But otherwise the place, obviously it's like Maya's kingdom, right? They're just creating a bigger web of illusion to entrap people.
And they're excellent at it. Very good.
So you can use, they say, to cut a tree down, you have to use a limb from the tree. Take an axe and you put the axe handle is also a piece of the tree. So to cut the illusion of people that is being enhanced by all this technology, we can also use a certain amount of technology to cut through the illusion.